Welcome everyone to the very special episode 2 of the Better Mindset podcast, where we talk about everything from mindfulness, mental health, and wellness. And we are very excited about what we got going on today, Julian.
Yeah, I would love to know if any of you watched the last podcast. We talked kind of just Adam and I about certain topics and certain things that we were interested in. If you want to go check that out on YouTube, it should be in the profile. We'll tag it in the description. And if you're on Instagram, definitely go check us out on YouTube. But we talk about the issue of mindfulness and a lot of teenage problems with the mind here in high school and many categories surrounded.
And stress and anxiety.
Stress, anxiety, yeah, exactly. So we formed this club called the Better Mindset, and the Better Mindset, kind of us and a team, helps to ensure that we are able to instill mindfulness in people who need it. And we observe psychological issues, everything from top to bottom, to kind of kind of really give this outset to the people who need it. Adam.
Yeah, so like you said, we have our first episode out already. If you haven't listened, go check that out. And on that episode, we briefly mentioned it, that we wanted to start a string of interviews and bring on some special guests and have some very interesting and meaningful conversations that the kids listening or adults can take with them throughout the rest of their lives and hopefully learn some very insightful information. So on that note, I think it's time to bring on our special guest for this episode. Jenna Moniz is a Broward County Public Schools educator who has helped create Broward's mindfulness platform and resources, and most recently started a school for teenagers seeking their high school diploma through a social emotional approach. Jenna has a master's degree in brain-based instruction and has a certificate in the science of well-being. I met Jenna a couple of years ago when we were both on the superintendent's mindfulness initiative committee to get mindful curriculum into our schools. Jenna, thank you so much for joining us on our mindfulness podcast, The Better Mindset. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be here.
Hey guys, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me. Excited to get into this conversation about mindfulness and social emotional learning and wherever else it takes us.
Yeah,
so we're to jump into it, you know, ask you a couple of questions, see what you think about the topics that, you know, that like we're really into and we're really passionate about. So we'll start with the first question. Let's start off by telling us how and why you became interested in mindfulness and meditation. Did you practice as a teen?
You know, that's a really good question. And in hindsight, I won't tell you how many years ago, but a lot of years ago, we didn't have these kinds of labels, right? For mindfulness, you know, like nowadays you walk into the bookstore and there's like a section for mindfulness. You can, you know, it's like the buzzword, it's in vogue, it's the cool thing, it's the trend now. And so we didn't have the words and the labels for, you know, these things, but looking back, I can definitely say that mindfulness activities were certainly a part of my daily life. I'll give you an example. I was an outdoor kind of kid. I just loved to be outside. I loved to play. I loved to, you know, I loved nature. You know, and outside, you know, oftentimes it was playing and hanging out with people, but there was also a lot of time that I spent climbing trees, for example, hiking, just in the woods, sitting. You know, I look back and I'm, you know, it blows my mind how much time I spent just looking up at the sky. Like I used to spend a lot of time just like looking up at the sky and watching the clouds. And I didn't realize that it was like, you know, a thing. It was just, you know, it was calming to me. It was helping to get me, you know, just in a place of feeling good. I didn't know what I was doing. It just felt good. I spent a lot of time outside listening to the sounds of nature, walked a lot. I always had dogs, so I walked my dogs. You know, there are a lot of these things, activities that I did and didn't realize that maybe they were quote unquote mindfulness activities. And I think sometimes when we over-label things, you know, we kind of put them into a box. And so people go, oh, mindfulness, that must be that crossing your legs thing and putting your fingers together and going om thing. And it doesn't have to be. I think for me, you know, just taking a nice walk, literally looking at the, you know, looking up at the sky, listening to the sounds of nature, even jogging, you know. I know, Adam, you're a golfer. Julie, I'm not sure what you're into, but any activity that can kind of just put you in the present moment where, you know, your mind is not perseverating on things that happened in the past, and I should have done it this way, I could have said it that way, and oh man, I would have, could have, you know, all of the past stuff, or worried about what's coming in the future. And I've got this coming up, you know, all the things that you guys sit up worrying about. I've got zillions of tests. All my teachers put the tests on the same day. Why don't they talk to each other? You know, all the things that we give you to worry about, not to mention when you turn on the news and everything that's happening, you know, even wider than just our homes and our schools, you know, you worry. And one of the things that I read is that any kind of pain or worry happens either in the past or in the future, never in the present moment. There's never any problem in the very, very present moment. So if we can just find ways, whatever way works for you, because taking a walk doesn't work for everybody, looking at the sky doesn't work for everyone, walking a dog, but whatever works for you that can get you centered in this present moment, even if it's just listening to a piece of music, you know, is helpful. So I didn't know it was called mindfulness. You know, we didn't have these labels. And of course, this is nothing new to ancient, you know, Eastern traditions, et cetera, but it's pretty new to, you know, Western tradition and now Western medicine, right? So now this is becoming a part of medical treatment and preventative treatment. Back then we didn't have labels for it, but we were doing it.
Yeah. And I mean, my next question was going to be, how would you describe mindfulness in a way that teens understand? But I briefly mentioned it on the last podcast too, which was mindfulness has to, it doesn't have to be there sitting with your eyes closed or your legs in crisscross applesauce. You know, it's like just, it can be whatever you enjoy, whatever relaxes you. And what, when I talk, I think a lot of kids resonate with that because they have specific things that they do to relieve stress. Obviously some stress relievers are better than others or healthier than others, I should say. But people have their own mindfulness practices that they go through on a daily basis. But, you know, many people believe that mindfulness and socially emotional learning go hand in hand. So I guess skipping my second question, I would say, what are your thoughts on or feelings about that? Do you think we could really have mindfulness and socially emotional learning one without the other? And can you maybe explain what you think what social emotional learning is to the audience?
Yeah, so true, right? In the many ways that mindfulness can look. And one of the things that's actually one of the first things that I talk to my students about is the concept of what's called multiple intelligences. And multiple intelligences is a theory out of Harvard University, Howard Gardner out of Harvard University, that basically says, we've got more intelligences than we test at school, right? If you think about how you guys are tested at school, you're typically tested in subjects through reading. So that would be like your verbal linguistic, or you're tested through mathematics. So your logical mathematics. So even if it's in like the area of social studies or history or science, mostly what you're doing is reading. But those aren't the only intelligences, according to Howard Gardner. You've got your musical rhythmic intelligence. You've got your bodily kinesthetic intelligence, your intrapersonal intelligence, which is kind of like your self-knowledge, your self-smarts, your interpersonal intelligence, which is like your social, right, intelligence, the way that you deal with people, your naturalistic intelligence. These multiple intelligences that are more than just skills, and they're more than just that thing that you're good at. They're more than just a talent that you have. These are legitimate intelligences. The problem is we don't assess them in schools. We only assess two of them, your reading and your math. your logical, mathematical, and your verbal linguistic. So what does that do to kids? For kids, if you're not really strong in reading and you're not really strong in math, and we test you in it over and over and over again, by the time that kids are your age, they've already got that message in their head that they are not intelligent. And whether or not they are skilled at music, making music, playing music, whether or not they are skilled at listening to their friends, you know, being a good friend, whether or not you're skilled at sports, for example, these aren't things that we put high on the priority academic list. And so lots of students get this feeling that they aren't intelligent. And it's a fallacy, in my opinion. In fact, right, if you were to Google right now the top 10 workforce skills, like what the top companies are looking for, neither of them are reading or math. They are all social emotional. They are all, how do you deal with people? How do you communicate? How do you problem solve in a group? How do you come up with solutions? How do you fail and come back from failure? These are all skills that are considered social emotional skills, yet we don't assess them in school. And we're only now starting to teach them. So to your question, Adam, the importance of mindfulness and social emotional learning in school, to me, mindfulness, the idea of mindfulness, right? Because mindfulness is just a fancy word that means being aware and being in the present moment. You can't do much if you're not aware. So it's necessary to have the mindfulness first and foremost. That just means you're aware. You know what you know. You know what you're thinking. Then from there, you can do stuff. That's when the social emotional development comes in. And to think of social emotional learning as something additional or something separate from academics is also a fallacy. So any of your classes, whether it be your math classes, your history classes, your science courses, the way that we teach them now, unfortunately, is the same way. And, you know, I'm generalizing here, so not everywhere, but even at your university levels, we are still teaching the same way that we taught 100 years ago for a different, totally different world, where it's mostly we're pushing information at you and your job is to regurgitate that information on a piece of paper, or now a computer. Cram the information into your head and then regurgitate it on the test.
Mm-hmm. And I think right now, in the middle of, you know, AP season or finals season, it's very difficult for them to think like, oh, I'm going to pass the test with flying colors, because, you know, you start to get in your head. And when you have multiple APs or high level classes or just very stressed out, plus anything else going outside of school, it's going to be very difficult. And I know, Julian, you can attest to that too. So, you know, having everything going on is just, it's going to make any teenager feel really difficult, which is why you said we need it in schools.
Yeah, and I feel like everything that you mentioned is super important. And I think that a lot of things that I'm starting to see, at least as a teenager, is when I'm out and about, when I'm talking to people, when I'm, you know, when I'm around the social circle, you know, I see so many of these kids, brilliant kids. Some of them are just beyond brilliant. You don't understand sometimes where they get the intelligence, but you think that in the future, they're not going to be able to, you know, make a conversation, be proper in a social circle, right? That social skill is so important, and it's so crucial to the development of your career, right?
And because of COVID too, this year, everyone's stuck in their house with quarantine, the stress and anxiety levels have just completely risen.
Exactly. Well. And that's the thing. And it's always been the same. It's not what you know, it's who you know. And you can't go around thinking that that your intelligence is going to skyrocket you into the world. And that's what people don't understand. So I think that it's very important to exercise mindfulness in the school curriculum, which is exactly what you mentioned. But you know, that also goes in hand with the anxiety and depression, which Adam was talking about, which is the main psychological problem I feel that are affecting students in high school nowadays. It's that I read something that stated that the anxiety that high schoolers are feeling right now is the same anxiety that people were facing in mental institutions in the 1900s. And that's super, it's crazy to think about, because we're being exposed to this level of stress and this level of competition, especially in high schools now, that we have no time to enjoy in our curriculum. You know, these mental health practices and get together our mindful.
You feel like a lot of teachers are teaching for the test and not so much to teach us the information, the content.
Regurgitation of information, exactly what you were saying there. So that leads me into my next question. We all want to be healthy, physically or mentally, but sometimes we feel anxiety, depression, anger, or overwhelmed with stress, you know, the things I've been mentioning. What can we do as teens to prevent our anxiety or depression from taking over our lives? Are there a couple of practices that you can share with us?
Yeah, I mean, you guys are bringing to light a lot of really, really important topics that it's so refreshing that you all are talking to one another about this, because you're probably going to be more versed at it than the adults, right? Here's the thing. When you're stressed out, you're not working in the part of your brain that is the creative part of your brain or the critical thinking part of your brain. When you're worried, you're stuck in that what's called the reptilian brain, the back of your brain, where it's the fight or flight mode, right? So you're ready for something to happen. So your brain literally will either go into ready to flee, to run away, or to fight back, or it freezes. And if you're constantly bombarded with reasons to be anxious, then your brain is constantly in survival mode. And what we're finding is exactly what you're saying, Julian, is that many teens right now are dealing with high levels of stress because of the bombardment of all kinds of, from every direction, from schools, maybe in your homes, stuff that's happening socially, politically, the pandemic. And so if you can't get out of stress mode, you literally can't learn. So it's not even like a nice thing. It's not even like, hey, we should be nice to the kids and do these, you know, soft, you know, activities to make it these cozy activities. No, it is physiologically impossible to retain information if your brain is stuck in fight or flight. You can't do it. You're sending all kinds of chemicals out to more than 1500 chemicals through your body to be in fight mode. And if you're turning on the TV and turning on your social media and you got things happening in school and you got 7 tests to prepare for, and it's all this stress coming at you, then you're constantly in that state of fight or flight, and it wreaks havoc on the body. And so how do we deal with a lot of this stress? The first thing that I would recommend to anyone, students, young people, adults, is to not repress it, not hold it in. See, and I think that's where we go wrong oftentimes, because, you know, we focus on the behavior. And oftentimes when you express what you're feeling, it's tough. That's when it gets, you know, it becomes inconvenient for a lot of people. And to be completely honest, many of your teachers, many of the parents aren't ready to hear what you're going through. And so we do a good job of saying, get over it. Oh, shake it off. You'll be okay. Brush it off. Even worse for guys, you know, guys, don't cry. Don't express your feelings. It's the worst thing that we could tell you to do, because if you don't express it, then it stays inside. And that's where you start having the anxiety. That's where you start having the issues. And these things turn into real physical ailments. If they continue on, they end up turning into disease ultimately. Anything from headache to ulcers to you name it. And right now, the number two reason that young people die right now is from suicide.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't give us pause, I don't know what does.
And you know,
number two reason.
What I think is really important to add is that like here, like nowadays, our ways to cope with those or the natural ways that we cope with those are maybe could be even more negative, like negative attributes that people can be like, why are you doing it? Like, why are you dealing with this way, right? Like one example is procrastination, or one example is like getting sidetracked with something else, or maybe not being so focused on the present moment. You know, you're super distracted, or maybe you genuinely did not have enough time to do a homework assignment in the night. And when you go to class the next day, they give you problems and they're like, why didn't you do your homework or whatever? You're supposed to be responsible, especially like you're in an AP class. Why didn't you do this or whatever, you know? And especially, that happens a lot in middle and elementary school. When you don't turn in your homework, there's a sense of disappointment, you know, like basically like a how could you, you know? And that's the only way that we can that we can release some of that stress is like, okay, you know what, maybe tonight I'm not going to do the homework assignment. You know, it'll reflect badly in my grade, but it would make me more relaxed tonight and take off some of that stress. Yet that positive method of getting rid of that stress is still frowned upon. And like you said, how we're kind of prohibited from showing our emotions, that's also withheld. And I think that that's a super negative consequence that needs to be fixed.
Listen, if we're still teaching you all the same way that we were teaching you 100 years ago, and we're facing totally different global issues today, you know, it doesn't take a genius for us to say, do we need to make some changes to the way that our school systems work? And I mean on a big scale. I mean from your public school systems to your Yale universities. Mm-hmm. We still function in this model of the idea that the more information you have in your head, the more content knowledge you have in your head, the more intelligent you are, the smarter you are. It's a fallacy. In fact, we're finding out more and more that our hearts, which are brains in and of themselves, our hearts are 5,000 times more powerful electromagnetically than our brains. They develop in the human fetus before our brains do. They have a neural system in and of itself that really make it its own brain. The intuition of the heart, the intelligence of the heart, is not yet discovered. We pay more attention to what we have in our brains than we do to our hearts. And if we just shifted the focus more to the intelligence of our hearts, we would find more compassion, more empathy, more intuition to make the right decisions, less competition. Mm-hmm. Because all of the competition and that, you know, the better that I'm better than you and I know more than you and right in the grade point average and where you fall in your class and how do you getting into the best universities and all of that stuff, that's all stuff of the brain. That's all stuff of the mind. Don't get me wrong. Of course, we need a balance, but we don't focus enough on the intelligence of the heart. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the direction when we talk about the ways that the school systems should shift. It should shift in the direction of the heart. I hear people say, you got to make a decision with your mind and not your heart. And it's the furthest from the truth as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. It's the heart that should be in charge. It is an intelligence in and of itself. It's a mind.
Let me tell you the story real quick, Jenna, yeah. And I think you'd appreciate it.
Yeah.
The other day I was helping my golf coach with this clinic that she was holding of a bunch of seventh and eighth grade boys. And obviously I'm still in high school. I'm still a kid, I'm an adult, but you know what, these little kids, they see, when they see an older kid, they see you as an authority figure, right? They see you as a counselor, someone helping there. And so I was, you know, with the kids on the course, you know, driving them in the golf cart, being like the, you know, chauffeur, dropping them off. They walk onto the green by themselves. And they're 7th, 8th grade boys. They're old enough, but you know, I was there to help. And there was this one kid who was like, oh, well, he was boasting. I hit it so far. I hit it so far because I usually played from the back tees and I'm better than you guys. And I hit from farther back, but you guys all have to hit up here. That's the only reason why I'm hitting from so close. And I'm like, why? And the funny thing is, I feel like we all knew that one kid right? Yeah, I know what you guys are doing, but I'm doing this. You know what I mean? And then this other kid walks up to me and he goes, this seventh grade kid, 12, 13 years old. He walks up to me and he goes, why is he doing that? Like, why is he just bragging about everything that he's able to do? Like, that's not going to make us feel any better. It just got me thinking so much, like, about, you know, my younger sibling at home during the pandemic, a year of isolation away from friends, from social interaction with other people, and then they're going to have to be put back out just into the world, you know, I wouldn't say communication skills that are lacking, but just social skills, how to deal with things that are going out in the world. And you know what, maybe this kid who was bragging about his game or whatever, maybe that's just the kid, that's who he is. And he hasn't learned that, you know, you probably shouldn't bring yourself up to put others down yet. But it was really touching for the other kids come to me and just ask me, like, I just don't get it.
Well, and the fact that it turned into, because it could have gone a couple different ways, right? You know, you could have gotten a kid like me, you know, when I was young, you know, I was that kid, I was going to defend, and, you know, I was like,
I'm going to prove myself. I can hit from back there. You know? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'd be the guy that says, well, why do you have to showboat? Why do you have to, I'd be the one to speak up and make the kid that was over boasting, you know, I'd want to check him. I'd want to put him in his place. But when you think about that, if I were to do something like that, I'm doing the same thing that the kid's doing. So I'm kind of taking the kid down for taking us down. And, you know, whether or not my intentions were to level him, I end up doing the same thing that he's doing. So if you think about, like, the way that we teach you all, even in the idea of debate, right? You think of debates and the debate team and how, and I get it. I get that we need to teach students to look for facts and to look for evidence and to speak from a place, not just of opinion and you know, fake news or whatever, that it needs to be factually based what you're talking about. But when you think about the way that a debate is set up, it's set up for someone to win and someone to lose.
My
argument is better than your argument, therefore I win, you lose. And if you look at the grand scheme of where we are as a country right now, you got sides. So you got these polarities of win, lose, debate, win, lose, red, blue, black, white, woman, male. You get these polarities as opposed to having conversations. You know, in my school, we use a lot of Socratic seminars where the goal is not to win. The goal is, definitely to come from a place of evidence and asking for evidence. But what usually happens is, the students learn from one another, because now you're listening. If your goal is not to win, because when your goal is to win, you're going to steal, rob, and cheat and do anything that you have to do to be on the winning team. But when the pressure's off to have to win, then you can really listen. And you can listen to the one that you think is on the other side and go, you know what? That's not a totally bad idea. Mm-hmm. And you know what? If you added that idea to my idea, we could probably come up with a new solution, something different. What if our politicians did that?
You know, Jenna, I think that was an amazing point, especially when you were talking about the intelligence of the heart and the intelligence of the mind, and really which one is superior to the other. And I feel like here, intelligence of the mind is important, of course. It's important because, you know, there's a lot of knowledge that comes with it. I feel like debates in general, the institution of debate was not created with the intelligence of the heart, but rather the intelligence of the mind. But if you think about maybe how Socratic seminars were made, they were not created just with the intelligence of the mind, rather the intelligence of the heart. It's not, okay, this is a method of coming to a solution, being in a debate, right? And that's really important. We can come to a solution, you know, but at the end of the day, one person wins over the other person doesn't feel so positively about it, the other person feels positively about it. Socratic seminars are, you know, maybe let's not verse each other, right? Socrates was explaining, let's conjoin ideas to come to a conclusion. You know, and that also relates to what Adam was saying about his story. It's him, maybe that little kid had the intelligence of the mind that maybe he was very good at golf and he could hit from the back, right? But now that intelligence of the heart is how you express it. Do you express it maybe without saying anything and being humble and being like, oh yeah, guys, we can hit it from up here. But then maybe later when you all hit from down there, you humbly beat them, right? But without showboating it, right? And then maybe now you can understand that when you convey that with your mind and you say, I'm super good at this, this is my intelligence, this, you're not using any emotion of the heart, and that has an effect on your life and the path that, you know, that your career goes, if you tie that back in too. So
I love that balance. You got to have a balance is the idea.
Jenna, before, this has been a great conversation. Again, we're so thankful that you were able to come on. Before we let you go here and we kind of sign out, is there any last words you want to say to any teenagers or even adults watching out there, listening?
Oh, man. I think right now with everything that's happening, not just where we are, but globally, you know, I would definitely say, first and foremost, take the time to take care of yourself. It is not a selfish act to get what you need, express what you need to express. You can feel your emotions, all of them, the whole gamut of them, and not necessarily become it. It is okay to feel them and express them. Once you express them, you probably won't become that emotion. So feel it, get it out, whether that getting it out is writing about it, talking about it, going to the beach and getting it out in the sand, crying about it, singing about it, making music about it, dancing about it, getting the flow of energy going, because it really is a game of energy. And if you've got bottled up feelings and emotions that you're not addressing and really you're not expressing, they're going to do more harm than they do good. Better out than in, right? So take care of yourselves first and foremost. And rather than competing with one another, you know, grab somebody else and bring them in with you.
Well, Jenna, thank you so much. We love to have you on. And guys, if you're watching on YouTube, if you're watching on Instagram, wherever you're watching, make sure to follow us on our page, you know, go to our YouTube, you know, we definitely are going to have different speakers on different days. Thank you guys for tuning in and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you, Jenna, again.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's been a pleasure. Mm-hmm.